Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too. You're going to be, too, once we actually get her here, which she's here. I just haven't introduced you yet. Joan Pride is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She's an original member of our Brain Trust and a great friend of ours. She joins us once a week to tell us what's going on in the world, according to the folks at Kiplinger. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Jim. Thanks very much.
Happy Independence Day, a day late.
Yes, that's right. Happy belated Independence Day.
How was the celebration in our nation's capital?
Well, it was very interesting. It was a little truncated because, you know, people jam the National Mall every year in the afternoon waiting for those fireworks and also for a concert by the National Symphony Orchestra, which is always on the steps of the Capitol. And they just fill the whole area. Well, at about, I'd say, between 5 and 6 o'clock, we had not only severe thunderstorm warnings, but a tornado warning for that area. And they evacuated the mall.
They had this thing now. So it's like a billion people had to leave the mall.
Yeah, and remind you, they all come to the mall through 21 now. They never used to do this. When I used to go to the mall when I was young, we didn't do this. But they now have security checkpoints. You can't get into the mall without going through one of 21 security checkpoints. So they evacuated everyone and put them in 21 federal buildings that had been designated.
Holy
they called
mackerel.
Them safe areas. You know, like the Smithsonian.
And
yes. But when they came back in, they had to come back through the security checkpoints.
Oh, no.
So, but I mean, the fireworks went off and everything was okay, but it was a little crazy.
That's bizarre.
But the rain was pretty bad.
Did it actually rain? I went to bed.
it pretty much monsoon.
So the storm actually came through then, huh?
It was not a tornado, but there were very severe thunderstorms, and I guess they were afraid of lightning, you know, people being hit by lightning, and that's why they had to evacuate.
Oh, of course.
But, it was bad.
Can you imagine a lightning striking all those people shoulder to shoulder?
Right.
Lightning striking to kill 1,000 people.
But the poor people, you know, sometimes people camp out there for hours just to get the best spot, you know.
Right.
And to be told that you have to evacuate and lose your spot probably won't get it back would really make me mad.
Here's my question, Joan.
Yes.
Why?
Why what?
Why would they do that?
Why would they evacuate?
Do you have any desire to camp out for hours just to get a good spot?
Well, not that I'm now that I'm old, but when I was younger, you'd want to get in the front row for the concert.
Okay, all right. And rather than just watch it on television, huh?
Right. Boy, are you old. By asking that question just shows how old you are.
I'm kind of I'm a recliner kind of guy.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and you know what? I didn't have to get evacuated last night either.
No.
I didn't have to move.
And you know, those fireworks don't look bad on TV.
Honey, I'm ready for my bowl of ice cream now.
Right.
I didn't have to move. But, you know, it is great that they celebrate that. And you know, Joan, I came up with an idea yesterday that I think is near genius.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I want to run it by you.
Okay.
And I talked about this with Don Lambro yesterday, who you know is a chief political reporter with the Washington Times. Why wouldn't it be a great idea for all 535 of our members of Congress and the president and all the candidates who aren't already represented in one of those groups, why wouldn't it be a good idea for all of them on Independence Day to go somewhere on the Capitol steps or somewhere and say, okay, and announce to the world, you know what, ladies, folks around the world, you need to understand something, sort of like we did after 9/11. Why don't we do this every year on Independence Day? Let's all get together and tell the world, you know what, we have our differences. I don't know that I really like this guy. He and I certainly don't see eye to eye on politics. I'm going to try to beat his brains out in the next election. Okay, you understand that, right, world? But let me tell you something. Today is Independence Day, and you need to understand that we're Americans, and we stand together on many, many things. And, world, you need to understand that. What would be wrong with that?
Yeah, no, I think that would be terrific.
Am I too much of a romantic? I mean, if we could do it, if we could do it after 9/11, why wouldn't that be a great thing for the President of the United States to propose every year on Independence Day?
Or Congress to propose.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Now, I know that that's a romantic, I'm a hopeless romantic, but I think that would be, I mean, the world was impressed when they did that after 9/11.
Yes.
They were impressed, and I don't know why we don't do that every year.
I know. That's a good question.
So would you handle that, Joan? Can I give you that?
Absolutely. Let me work on that for you. Yeah, I'd be happy to.
I'd appreciate that. Joan, let's move over and talk about what you guys have on the front page of the Kiplinger letter.
Oh, did you want to talk about the Kiplinger letter?
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, okay.
The economy. You say growth is likely to speed up a bit, perhaps to as much as 2.75. Are you talking about this year? In 07?
No, because remember, this lead that we're writing this time is our early
08,
call on the 2008 economy.
Okay, all right.
So we're saying that for 2008, our early forecast is growth will be at about a 2.75% pace, which means it's going to have to speed up compared to the second half of what we're forecasting for 2007, which is 2%.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, you say for the second half of 2007.
Right.
And we know that the first quarter of 2007 was below 1%.
Right.
We don't know what the second half of 2007 is yet. I don't think. I haven't seen that number.
No, I haven't either.
At least.
I think we'll know pretty soon, though.
So based on what you're saying, we may have less than the 2% growth in 07.
That's right. But we see things getting better in 2008.
Yeah. So 07 was kind of a retooling, retrenching, catch our breath kind of year.
Right, exactly.
But you know, Joan, have you noticed, though, that it doesn't really seem like that? Have you noticed that? Have you noticed there's not a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth out there that you would think we would have with the kind of economy that we're having right now?
Yeah, the main weeping and wailing I'm hearing about has to do with interest rates.
Well, exactly, and gas prices. You know, one of the reasons why I think the weeping and wailing is not happening, Joan?
Why?
Even with a 1 point, we have to put these percentages in perspective, Joan. 1 point, let's say 2% growth on a $13 trillion economy is still a lot of business. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
See what I'm getting at?
That's true.
All right, so Japan is growing at 9%, right?
Right.
Big whoop. Its economy is one-fifth of ours.
I don't think the Japanese would like that.
One-fifth of ours.
Is that your technical
big whoop,
analysis?
That's actually a Chinese term. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Stand by. Quick break. 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with Joan Prine. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com, where you can find the blog, and which we update every weekday. You can find our newsletter, which you can subscribe to. You can also check out the archives. We have thousands of those in categories. And also articles in categories and Brain Trust members in categories. Lots of stuff there. Find the topic that you're interested in, is on your mind today, and find a resource that will help you. I hope you'll check it out and use it to your advantage. Don't forget you can podcast all of the archives, all of the interviews. You can actually take fair use possession of that. And one of these days I'll explain what I mean by fair use, but I think you know what I mean. And then also don't forget to check out our knowledge base. AskJim.biz, the world's only knowledge base for small business where you can go and get answers now. And if we don't have the answer, for some weird, strange reason, we don't have your answer, send us in, you can ask us a question and send it to us right there at AskJim.biz. So check that out and use it to your advantage. No barrier to entry on any of our websites. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about the economy for 08, the rest of 07 really, and 08 as well. And I'm glad you're doing this because a lot of us are sitting down with our budgets right now.
Of course.
And we're trying to, trying to say, okay, how should I budget? You know, if my sales, and by the way, folks, you know, this is obviously what we're talking about is just a general macro look at the economy. You need to look at your own experience and how you know, you may be the U.S. economy may be growing at 1.5% or whatever, but you may be growing a lot faster than that. And if you are, then those are the numbers you need to use.
That's right.
But they're looking at their, you know, they're budgeting for fuel, they're budgeting for sales, they're budgeting for payroll, they're doing a lot of things. And you know, as we went to the break, we were talking about the economy. I mean, think about this. We've gotten used to having a 3% or more growth per year.
Right.
When you put that kind of a percentage on a $13 trillion economy, that's a lot of business, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it. Sure.
And, you know, here's what's weird, Joan, interesting. I ask audiences all the time, what do you think is the number one economy in the world? You know, you'd be surprised how many people say China.
Really?
Or when I say, what is the
Why
second largest
say
economy?
Us?
Well,
say us?
Because everybody thinks China's all this booming economy. Or when I say, what's the second largest economy on the planet? And many, many of them say China.
Wow.
And they don't realize that China is 1/5 of the U.S. economy.
Yeah.
20%. So wow. 9% growth in China a year. And India, by the way, is 1/7 of our economy.
Well, I did not know that. Wow.
1/7 of our economy. And so 9% growth in India or China doesn't create as much business, as much profits and activity and wealth as 2% or 3% of a U.S. economy at $13
trillion. Right. Wow.
See? So I think that might be one of the reasons that we've got to rethink how we look at growth percentages. What do you think? Does that make sense?
It sure makes sense to me, yes.
Now, housing, according to Kiplinger, is going to be less of a drag by the first part of next year.
That's right, because we think we're going to hit bottom on this housing slowdown, which I realize is, you know, regional. It's not occurring in every part of the country, but it's occurring in a lot of places. But we think we're going to bottom out by the beginning of next year, it looks like.
I was in Orange Beach, Florida, Alabama, which is, as you know, the Gulf Coast part of Alabama, right next to Florida, over the weekend, and there were many, many, many. In fact, I asked somebody about the inventory, and they said there was a 2.5-year inventory of houses and condos
Ooh.
For sale in that little, you know, that U.S. Mediterranean area. They call it Fort Walton, Destin, Panama City, Orange Beach, Pensacola, that whole region down through there.
Right.
But just in that area of Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, it was two and a half years of inventory. Now, part of that is the storms, you know, reaction from the hurricanes that came through. But
that's right.
That's a lot of houses that are still for sale.
Yeah.
Joan, the other thing on home buying that's going to be mm-hmm. a challenge, you guys point this out, has to do with some of these great mortgages. When they signed the mortgages, they were great, but they may not be so great over the next year. What do you think?
Right. Well, they had low teaser rates that go up and up and up as rates adjust in the economy. So folks who may have just barely been able to afford the teaser rate are having trouble paying their mortgages when they start adjusting upward.
Mm-hmm. And this is where they started out with interest only, and after 3 years they had to start paying some principal, or the rate was 4% or something, whatever it may have been at the beginning, but now it's going to be 6% or 7% because it's that way by contract.
Right, and lots of people get these mortgages, but the people we're talking about right now are what they call the subprime borrowers who don't qualify for conventional financing.
They probably, and I don't mean to be harsh, folks, but these are people who probably shouldn't have been given that kind of credit. I'm not saying
right. No,
I'm not saying they shouldn't have bought a home. I'm just saying they probably bought a home they really couldn't afford.
Right.
And those chickens are coming home to roost over the next year or so. And I hope the whole subprime thing goes away and doesn't come back, because it's not good for anybody. It's an artificial situation, folks, that shouldn't be allowed to continue. 29 after, we're going to be right back with Joan Pryde. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. Remember my life.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging around with me. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. We're talking about the economy. How's it doing? How's it going to do? How strong is it? Joan, the economy continues to impress, doesn't it?
Boy, it sure does.
And the one thing that I keep looking at, Joan, when in terms of housing, in terms of the growth of the economy, in terms of consumer spending, et cetera, the one thing I keep looking at is as a fundamental. You know, a lot of people, a lot of economists, you know, they look at gold. What is the, you know, what's gold doing? That's not what I, how I can tell how the economy is doing. I look at jobs, and we now have more people employed than ever before in the history of our country.
Right.
And according to Kiplinger, we're going to create 1.5 more new jobs next year. No, I'm sorry.
Not 1.
More jobs.
5.
In 1.5
million
more,
yeah,
jobs in 07. In a year where we have less than 2% growth, we're still creating 1.5 million jobs. And Joan, as long as we have this kind of employment and that many new jobs coming on board, and we know people are being paid at a rate that's much better than ever have been before.
Right.
That tells you that the economy is fundamentally sound.
Oh, absolutely.
It does. It tells me that anyway.
Yeah, that's right. It is. I would think so.
So, and also you guys point out that while business has not been spending quite as much as they have been in the past, that their activity is probably going to be picking up a little bit.
Right. We're saying that I guess there have been some economic indicators, such as durable goods, that haven't looked too good lately. But we're saying to take the long view and don't focus on just one month's numbers. We still think the trend is going in the right direction.
Well, business spending is not day-to-day like consumer spending is.
That's true.
Businesses don't do impulse buying. Businesses don't, you know, don't take vacations and buy.
Are you saying that I do?
Yeah, of course you do.
Oh, okay.
But you know, businesses do more planning. We do more long range calculations and purchases and so, but Joan, with all the jobs that we have and all the new jobs coming on board, businesses must spend money in order to support those jobs.
Right.
And Joan, you're not building. You know, you're not creating those kind of jobs if there's not some economic activity going on.
Well, that's true.
But the big worry is still inflation, isn't it?
Well, yes, that continues to be a problem. We're saying that those worries will continue into next year.
And to the point where you guys actually are predicting that by the end of 2008, interest rates will be higher than they are from the Fed.
Well, we might. Interesting the way we wrote this. We say the Fed will be tempted to hike rates.
Yeah. Well, I got the feeling that in the last meeting, the Fed sort of backed off on their concern about. They didn't, you know, the language they use is maddening, but
right.
it's not as bad as when Greenspan was in there. But I got the feeling that they're not as concerned about inflation with this last meeting as they have been. And of course, the big thing, Joan, is gas prices. Even though gas,
right,
and fuel and energy and food are not part of the core inflation basket that they use, which is now, that core is now at what, 2.5%?
Right.
I think that's it. But still, the food prices are going up. Gasoline prices, we know where they are. has got to be taking a toll on inflation. But
right.
Gas
prices have come down a little bit, and you know, there's dancing in the streets because around here they're down $2.99. I never thought people would be excited about $2.99 gas, but they are.
Well, I know, and over the weekend, I paid like $2.80, $2.75.
Wow,
or something like that.
That's exciting.
Out in Heartland America, that's what you got. You know, we don't live in D.C., but
that's right.
But no, that's right. I mean, it made me nauseous, Joan. My first thought was elation that I wasn't paying $3.10 a gallon, and then it made me nauseous to think that I was happy about paying $2.75.
That's exactly my point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, but anyway, the inflation is, if we can get that down. And you know, Joan, I really think that regardless of what else happens with inflation, if we can somehow just get fuel prices, gasoline prices especially, under I can't believe I'm about to say under $3 a barrel a gallon. God, that just, but you know, Joan, I was just in Copenhagen. It was like, I did the math on it, it was like $9 a gallon over there.
That's right, yeah,
in Copenhagen. All right, we've got more to come, folks, after these messages. We're going to talk a little bit about what the Supreme Court had to say about pricing. And we're going to talk about some small business loan opportunities, possibly, right after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com, as I told you earlier. But the one I wanted you to know about now is Joan's website, the Kiplinger website, which is kiplinger.com. I encourage you to check it out and check out their publications, too, ladies and gentlemen, which include the flagship almost 84-year-old document that we work off of every year, the Kiplinger letter, which comes
every
by.
Every week, though. I mean, we're not working from the 84-year-old document.
That's
so
right.
Know. I just want to clarify that.
It's new every week,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah,
Joan had
true.
To get that in there. And that's the weekly publication. And and then we also have the three biweekly letters, the California letter, the agriculture letter, and the tax letter, that little thing, which comes every other week. And then they've got a magazine, Joan, right?
You bet. They've got Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine on newsstands.
On the newsstands, or you can subscribe to it, and you can do all that at the website, kiplinger.com. And then they also have a phone number I'd encourage you to call.
Oh, that's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And be sure to check out the 30-day free trial. Don't forget to ask them for that.
Right.
Joan, one of the things that businesses find themselves in these days is highly competitive situations.
Right.
Pressure from the internet, pressure from foreign competitors, and businesses have got to be able to adjust prices when it makes sense. But there are some things out there that are called resale price agreements, which are where manufacturers put floors on pricing. You can't beyond, below which a retailer can't go. But there's been some lawsuits about that, haven't there?
And they went all the way to the Supreme Court.
And what happened?
Well, the Supreme Court, in its inimitable fashion, handed down a narrow decision. It didn't get rid of resale price agreements. They can do that. Manufacturers can still set floor prices, but the pacts can only occur on a case-by-case basis, and they're still allowing challenges to them. So you're not necessarily
what did they actually
safe
do,
if you
Joan?
Have
did they,
one.
Did they actually accomplish anything with this ruling?
I'm not. Well, the only thing they did, I guess, was not ban them.
Well, folks, the reason I wanted to bring this up is those of you who are resellers of manufactured products, your manufacturer, if they haven't already, they may one day talk to you about a resale, what's called a resale price agreement, which is where you agree by contract not to sell, you know, a widget below $6.95 or whatever
right.
it may be.
Right.
And so you need to know what your options are there. You need to know how to deal with that. Joan, if I've got a product that's become obsolete or just doesn't sell anymore, I'm discontinuing it. If I want to sell it at my cost, I ought to be able to sell it at my cost.
That's right. But in this case, do you think that a business would need to talk to an attorney just to make sure that they're not possibly getting themselves into legal trouble?
There's no question about it, folks.
Yeah.
Just make sure that you understand what this resale agreement is. And before you get into anything like that, be sure that you talk to someone who can advise you on. We're not saying for you to get a lawyer to help you make the business decision. Only
right.
you can do that. Get them to tell you what your legal options are to help you make a more informed business decision.
Right, and what the legal ramifications might be of what would otherwise be a good business decision.
Right. Joan, one of the things Congress wants is more ethanol, more biofuels, right?
They sure do.
And they're willing to spend the money for it, aren't they?
They want at least 35 billion gallons of ethanol and biodiesel by 2022, which is what? That's, what are we in, 2007?
About 15 years.
About 15 years away. And they also want ethanol from other sources besides corn. There's also something called cellulosic ethanol or cellulosic alcohol that's made from plants and fibers and trees.
Switchgrass,
they want to stimulate
and things like that.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. So...
Well, you know, the thing that I'm concerned about, I know the corn industry is excited about the ethanol thing, but right now corn doesn't, from what I understand, Joan, corn doesn't produce it doesn't save us any carbon emissions or any money, really, because it costs so much to grow the corn and convert corn into ethanol.
Right.
So until we can until we can get to the point where it's a better deal, you know, I'm a little concerned about that. And also, Joan, as you know, the push to use corn as fuel is going to raise up the prices for food.
And already has, right?
Already has, exactly.
Now, with biodiesel being made from animal and plant waste, I wonder if that might help.
Well, hopefully it will. But those are, to me, those are the technologies we need to be focusing on.
Right.
Are those things, non-food items that can be used. But you know, Joan, we're just entering a period of time where we're trying to find what's the best, most efficient, which are we going to go forward with the beta or the VHS? You know what I mean? Is it going to be sugar? Is it going to be corn?
Yeah,
is it going to be switchgrass? Is it going to be waste, biodegradable waste? What is going to be the format, so to speak,
right,
that we're going to take into the future? Is it going to be VHS or beta? And I don't think we're there yet. And I'm concerned that we're leaving those decisions in the hands of the politicians who are giving out the incentive goodies, the tax goodies, and frankly, they don't have the ability to make that decision. That's what concerns me. 10 till, we're going to be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk a little bit about what Congress wants to do with regard to the Internet and health care. Now, this is a very interesting topic, Joan. They want the Internet to play a bigger role in health care. What are they up to on this?
Well, what I'm looking at now, see, I'm looking at the top of the page where it says health.
Yeah.
Where Congress is going to bolster prescription drug safety and
right.
cut drug prices.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to give the FDA authority to order up follow-up drug studies after medicines are on the market.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that I'm interested in is the one below that where
you're talking about the exchange of health records.
Internet, right? See,
right.
When I read that, Joan, I think of two things. Number one, how are they going to provide the privacy and the security?
Right.
Which obviously we're moving toward this. We're actually doing this. It's not like we can't do this, but they got to do that because of HIPAA. The Health Privacy Act. But also, Joan, there are fortunes going to be made by smart entrepreneurs who find a way to find out what kind of products and services and applications the health industry needs to move their information over the internet. And I'm telling you, 5 years from now, you're going to meet somebody who got filthy rich because they found a teeny-tiny little niche.
That's right.
Teeny-tiny little niche. And, you know, one little bitty thing that they moved, and they determined nobody else could see it, and they got rich off that.
Well, this is something that I think medicine should have done a long time ago, but maybe it was the privacy concern. I don't know. But I would think, for safety's sake, electronic exchange of health records would benefit everybody.
My daughter is a nurse, mm-hmm. and she's a charge nurse in a cardiac care unit, and she's been charting electronically now for over a year.
Well, that's
so.
Good.
So that's good. Yeah,
we're in 2007. They should have been doing this 5 years.
I think one of the problems was the doctors didn't want to do it.
I think you're right.
So they're doing that now. But all I'm getting at, folks, the reason I wanted to bring it up is Congress wants to do more technology, more internet, more digital work with healthcare, more the exchange of healthcare records to cut costs, reduce errors, duplicate tests. There's a move out there. This would be, you know, look around you. There are going to be some opportunities there. Joan, one of the things you guys I want to point out here is that there are people who are helping people who have money to lend connect with small businesses who want to borrow it.
And they don't know where to go. So we've got internet matchmakers. That's kind of cool, I think.
Yeah, I've never used
those guys. There's matchmaking firms called Prosper and Lending Club and others, and it's kind of like eBay for small business lending.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Check those out. Read those again, Joan.
Oh, the two firms that we mentioned are Prosper and Lending Club. They're matchmaking firms. They
collect. I don't know anything about them, folks. I don't know if they're reputable or not, but it's Prosper,
right.
I guess, .com and maybe LendingClub.com. I don't know. But look around for small business borrowing from individuals. Maybe that's be how you would look. I don't know. I'd like to know more about this, Joan, if we can find out more about it sometime. If you can tell your folks who wrote this, if they can give us more information.
Sure, we'll work on that.
Because this is very interesting. And what I was surprised at, Joan, was that today defaults are only running at about 3%.
Yeah, and I guess this is kind of a glass-half-empty thing. We make it sound like that's bad, and that may not be great, but 3% doesn't sound bad to me.
No, especially when banks only get 2.1%,
right.
And they're professionals at providing credit.
It's not that much different, yeah.
I was surprised to see that number.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn high.
Right.
I think that's a testament to the dedication and the reliability of small business owners.
I think you're right.
So I wish those guys had been around a few years ago when I was borrowing money from my spouse.
No, it does sound like a great idea.
Joan, quickly, 30 seconds, why would anybody want to be president of the United States with all the things going on?
Beats the heck out of me. There's going to be we list a whole bunch of tough issues that they're going to have to deal with, whoever's president. And you know what number one is on the list? Everybody knows. It's Iraq.
Yeah.
And
that's
followed
the
close behind by health care.
And immigration.
And immigration, right? Which didn't get fixed this year.
Yeah, and taxes, like the alternative minimum tax.
Right, trying to...
A lot
to,
of good stuff there. You got
right.
The only people who are running for... who really want to be president got to have an enormous ego, Joan.
Well, I think you're right.
I do.
Oh,
it's a big job. I don't know why anybody would... Unless they really want to serve, and I'd like to think maybe that's why they want. They
Let's
want the
hope.
Job. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.